Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Klossy, the Executive Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, the largest and oldest self-help group for victims of clergy molestation in the United States. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Klossy.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And today is a landmark case in the sentencing of Monsignor William Lynn in Philadelphia. He was found guilty in June of child endangerment and has been sentenced for 3.5 to 7 years in prison. And this is the first time that U.S. prosecutors have charged church leaders for failing to stop the abuse of those in their care. How does it strike you as a member of an organization of victims of clergy abuse?
Well, no one, of course, takes any kind of glee or joy when an individual is sentenced to prison. But with that said, this is definitely progress. If we're going to protect kids in this society, we have to not only pursue those who commit child sex crimes, but also those who conceal child sex crimes. Because when you conceal child sex crimes, you essentially enable even more child sex crimes. And this is, as you pointed out, the very first time ever, despite the fact that 6,100 American priests are accused of molesting tens of thousands of kids, this is the first time that a complicit church supervisor has been criminally prosecuted for hiding those crimes. So it's definitely a significant development.
Well, the defense, of course, argued that the Monsignor William Lynn was, in fact, hamstrung, if you will, by the late Cardinal Anthony Bellaclavica, I guess is how you pronounce it, and that he had no authority to remove priests in his ministry because of the orders from higher-ups. And, of course, he alleges that he repeatedly told the higher-ups about the abuse. I take it that the judge, Teresa Samina, did not buy that. She basically described Monsignor Lynn as being a monster in clerical garb, destroying the souls of children. That is pretty strong stuff.
Well, it is strong language, but we think it's appropriate. Monsignor Lynn is technically correct. He couldn't defrock priests. That was his boss's job. But he could have, at any time over more than a dozen years, he could have called the police, he could have told others to call the police, he could have urged victims to call the police, he could have sent anonymous letters to the police, he could have resigned his job. He had many, many options, ways he could protect kids. And yet what he chose to do instead was protect himself, his reputation, his career, and the reputations of his supervisors. So the notion that Monsignor Lynn was somehow some low-level, powerless flunky, the judge didn't buy it, the jury didn't buy it, and we shouldn't buy it either.
But what is the story with the late Cardinal Anthony Bevilacqua, who clearly would seem to be more guilty than Monsignor Lynn?
Sadly, because he never faced questioning on the witness stand, it'll be hard to say whose guilt is more severe. Certainly, Bevilacqua was among the most corrupt Catholic officials. He was a canon lawyer. He was a civil lawyer. He was a brilliant man. And instead of using his talents and skills to safeguard his flock, he used them to endanger his flock. He ordered, for example, lists of credibly accused and proven and admitted child molesting clerics to be shredded. And sadly, he's much more the norm than the aberration in the Catholic hierarchy.
Again, I'm speaking with David Klossy, the Executive Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, the largest and oldest self-help group of victims of clergy molestation in the United States. So, David, have you ever, it must be haunting you and the members of your group to try and understand the mentality not to mention the morality of people like the cardinal, who knew, you say he's a brilliant man, a lawyer, he knew exactly what was going on and ordered the shredding of lists of pedophile priests. Have you ever been able to figure out the motivation of so-called religious men and these incredibly unchristian actions, where their priority is protecting the institution, not those under their care that they're ministering to?
Well, I think Lord Acton said it best when he said that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, let's face it, the Catholic Church is a monarchy, and every bishop is the lord of his own kingdom, and he answers to virtually no one. On paper, of course, bishops answer to the Pope, but there's one Pope, there are 5,000 bishops spread across the globe, so in reality, every bishop answers to no one. And under that kind of an unhealthy system, of course, power is going to be abused. And I think the second crucial factor is that Vatican officials have virtually never denounced or disciplined or demoted or defrocked a single church official who put kids in harm's way. And if that's the case, then, of course, we shouldn't be surprised that bishops conceal child sex crimes. They never get punished for it, and they sometimes get rewarded for it, so why wouldn't they act in such a callous way? And that's why the secular authorities have to step up, like they did in Philadelphia, to really punish those who protect predators instead of protecting kids. That's the only way there'll be real change within the Catholic hierarchy, we're convinced.
But what explains their priorities of being more willing to pay out lots of money to silence those victims who have complained? And it's apparently that people have been complaining for a long time, and I'm sure you can fill us in on that. The idea that these priests get shuffled around and they go into counseling and they get indulged, whereas the only way that the victims get any redress is by going to the courts. And it's not as if they're compensated out of real contrition on the part of the Catholic Church. They're compensated as a kind of reluctant public relations gesture.
Well, I think that's exactly right. You've characterized it perfectly. I mean, this may sound harsh, but the Catholic hierarchy doesn't reward risk takers. It rewards company men who toe the line, men who don't step out of line. And I think a lot of bishops, even those who you know, really deep down have good, kind hearts, fundamentally, when it comes to child sex crimes and cover-ups, they're timid, they're scared. And they have a PR person or PR staff who says, you know, you let us handle the public side of this, and don't bother yourself with it. And they have a team of lawyers who say, we've kept these things under wraps for decades. You know, you go out and do your spiritual work, and you let us handle these pedophile priests. And so bishops, I think, you know, are glad to turn over a thorny, complicated, hurtful mess to the experts on their staff. And I think they're happy to just do what has always been done. And that explains their continued recklessness and deceit and callousness. I mean, I don't think bishops sit around all day and plot and scheme, how can we help predators, how can we hurt kids? But sadly, even if that's not, you know, their conscious thinking and their intent, that's what happens because they're essentially relatively timid men.
So again, I'm speaking with David Clossy, the Executive Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, the largest and oldest self-help group of victims of clergy molestation in the United States. And we're talking about the sentencing today of Monsignor William Lynn, who was given 3.5 to 7 years for having been found guilty in June of child endangerment. The co-defendant in the case, a priest named James Brennan, the jury was hung on his conviction, and The district attorney in Philadelphia has announced that they will retry Brennan. And that seems a bit odd, though, that the guy that covered up gets sentenced and the guy that actually did the molestation, in this case, it was an attempted rape of a 14-year-old, I assume it was a boy, he doesn't get sentenced or he gets off, but he's going to get retried. Do you have any understanding of why that happened?
Well, it was a very long, complicated trial. There were more than 2,000 documents introduced as evidence. It lasted 6 weeks. I think what was the undoing of Monsignor Lynn was that he and other church officials kept meticulous records about how they deceived parishioners and stonewalled prosecutors and made excuses. His co-defendant, Father Brennan, prosecutors announced just yesterday that they will retry that case, and we're grateful for that because we do believe that Father Brennan is a child molester and he's dangerous and he should be jailed. But certainly the big fish, if you were, the man that the prosecutors focused on most heavily, was Monsignor Lynn, and we're grateful that he'll be doing some jail time, and we hope that that will send a very powerful signal to other Catholic officials, current and former, who know about or suspect child sex crimes and are keeping their mouths shut even now.
Well, what Lynn was being found guilty of and sentenced for is covering up the activities of a priest called Edward Avery, who was convicted in 1999 of sexual assault. His rap sheet is pretty appalling, isn't it?
It's absolutely appalling. And even though the charges were specific to Brennan and Avery, luckily the judge let prosecutors introduce scores and scores of pages and evidence and witnesses that dealt with dozens of other pedophile priests in Philadelphia, because prosecutors wanted to get the point across to the jury, hey, this case, the Brennan case, the Avery case, you know, these are not exceptions to the rule. This is part and parcel of how Philadelphia Catholic officials for decades have hidden child sex crimes.
Well, in the case of Avery, Monsignor Lind knew he was guilty, and he helped steer him into a treatment program, which again shows you the priorities. The victims aren't treated, only the predators are. And then he was sent off, Avery was sent off to a new parish where he assaulted an altar boy.
That's right. And Monsignor Lynn was supposed to be on the, trying to remember the phrase, kind of a review panel or a monitoring board that was supposed to keep close tabs on Avery. And in fact, a year went by before that monitoring committee met even one time. So Monsignor Lynn tries to claim, I did my best, my hands were tied, it was really up to my boss. But that's not what the record showed, and that's not what the judge and jury believed.
So tell us about how your organization, that you're the executive director of, David Clossy, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, how it was formed. I mean, I think we all know why it was formed, but how it was formed and how difficult it was for you to reach this point where finally somebody's actually going to go to jail. I mean, we're talking about decades here of serial predators.
Oh, certainly. Yes. Well, our group was founded in 1988 in Chicago by a social worker. We're a nonprofit support and advocacy group. Our mission is to heal the wounded and protect the vulnerable. And yes, it has been a long, tough slog, a long, tough struggle to expose predators and help victims and prevent crimes and cover-ups. And this is a watershed moment. 6,100 priests in America are proven, admitted, or credibly accused child molesters, 6,100. And yet, finally now, in 2012, roughly 25 years after the first pedophile priest case made national headlines in America, only now is one church supervisor being locked up for his role in it. So that just shows two things. Number one, there's a great deal of work that remains. And number two, that if victims do find the courage and strength to speak up and call 911 and cooperate with law enforcement, sometimes, even years late, sometimes justice can be done, prevention can happen, and healing can take place as well.
Well, I've spoken recently with Sister Simone Campbell, who was singled out by the Vatican for teaching sort of radical feminism and the religious women of the United States, by extension, not being sufficiently vocal on being anti-abortion, pro-male priesthood, etc. And it just when you talk about, what, 52, how many pedophile priests in the United States?
6,100. Bishop's own admission. That's their figure, not ours. Right. We think the number is, of course, substantially higher.
Right, that's over 6,000, and you don't know the number of how many clergy we have of Catholic priests in the country, what percentage that would be?
Well, it's bishops claim that's about 4% of the
priests. Right. Well, I'm just saying that it seems that, again, the priorities of the Vatican are so strange and so incomprehensible that they're going after the religious women who really do the Lord's work. They do toil in the vineyards. They do minister to the sick and poor. And yet you've got these kind of corporate-type company men, as you described them, being indulged by the Vatican. And, you know, the millions. How much money has been paid out? It's an astounding figure, isn't it?
I think the last estimate I saw was between $2 and $3 billion. But, of course, hard data is very, very tough to come by. Church officials are almost as secretive about finances as they are about pedophile priests. And I think you do bring up a good point. The Vatican sometimes seems fixated on what some adults say to other adults. We think they should be fixated on what some adults do criminally to many children. You know, adult Catholics can decide what books to read and what theologians to listen to. They have some choices. You know, innocent kids, vulnerable kids, they don't have a lot of choices. And if we're going to focus on protecting anybody from anything, we ought to focus first and foremost on protecting boys and girls from child predators within the priesthood. You know, the first rule of a doctor is, number one, do no harm. And we think that should be the first rule within the church as well. Let's get rid of the dangerous priests and nuns and bishops and seminarians who molest kids, and then focus on other matters.
Well, just in closing, David Clossy, what will change this culture? Obviously, they're more prepared to pay off than they are to deal with whatever the root causes of this problem of having so many pedophile priests. And my understanding is that, in fact, I saw an article recently in the New York Times of a seminary somewhere where there was only one candidate, that the clergy is not attracting young men anymore, and those that they attract are not particularly healthy. Doesn't this come down to the Vatican's reluctance to even discuss the idea of ordaining women and of allowing priests to marry? Because it seems to me that a lot of these problems would go away if priests were allowed to marry. You know, they wouldn't be so obsessed with abortion if a priest's daughter got pregnant. You know, all of those, the social issues that seem to obsess the clergy would go away, because I think of one, obviously, having spoken a few times to Sister Simone Campbell, you recognize the tremendous sort of compassion and wisdom of the women in the church. But compared to the men, it's like a different universe.
Well, you know, we in SNAP try to be pragmatic and focus on where we can make change. And so I think that real changes are going to come in three places. Number one, victims, witnesses, and whistleblowers must continue to speak up. If victims, witnesses, and whistleblowers stay silent, there's not even a chance for reform. So victims and witnesses and whistleblowers have to find the courage to step forward. Secondly, police and prosecutors have to do what they did in Philadelphia and ignore the power and prestige and popularity of the church hierarchy and go after wrongdoers, no matter what titles they have or clothes they wear. And number three, lawmakers have to reform these archaic statutes that make it easy for child molesters to run out the clock on their crimes and make it easy for men like Cardinal Bevilacqua and Monsignor Lynn to conceal those crimes and escape responsibility. You know, ultimately, we think that the real reform is going to come outside the church hierarchy and despite the church hierarchy, especially when the secular authorities use their powers to investigate and prosecute the wrongdoers in the church.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, David Klossy.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Again, I've been speaking with David Klossy, the Executive Director of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, the largest and oldest self-help group of four victims of clergy molestation in the United States. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the pain in Spain.
Blue Spanish eyes, teardrops are falling from your Spanish eyes.